Welcome back to Percival's Place on TalkZone.com. Here's Percy Dyer.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Today we have a very exciting guest, Mr. Terry Townsend. And Mr. Townsend, how are you today, sir?
Hi, I'm fine. Glad to hear from you.
It's my pleasure. I'm very glad that you've decided to come on this show. Now, Mr. Townsend, you work for the cotton industry, am I correct?
That's right. I work for a particular component of it. It's called the International Cotton Advisory Committee.
Wow. All right.
Yep.
Well, there's a plethora of questions that will not be answered in 30 minutes.
Well.
But let's try and get as many in as we can.
Okay.
Wow, cotton. So how does your industry work? Tell me.
Well, it's a very big industry. We estimate that if you add up all of the people who are involved in supplying inputs, growing cotton, harvesting it, taking it to gins to clean it, you're talking over a couple of 100 million people worldwide. In round numbers, the industry produces about 25 million tons of cotton every year. And the largest producer is China. Second largest is India. The United States is the third largest. Cotton is spun into yarn and fabric in about 100 different countries, and made into everything from T-shirts and socks to fine wedding gowns, everything in between in many countries around the world. It serves as a basis for one of the largest commodity value chains of any in the world.
Well, you look at that. I could be wrong, but for the United States, isn't Texas and California being one and Texas being two, the two biggest states that produce cotton here?
You're half right. Texas is by far the largest.
Texas is the largest now? Okay.
Yep. California still produces a lot of cotton, but the second largest, I think, is Georgia, perhaps Louisiana.
Oh,
I'm actually not sure about that. But no, the United States produces about 3 million metric tons of cotton a year, and in round numbers, 2 million of that comes out of Texas alone. And the rest of that is in other states.
Oh, okay. You know, when I remember studying this thing about 20 years ago, and California was still ahead of Texas at the time. I'm surprised
That's
now
right.
to hear Texas overcame them now. And I didn't know Georgia was still producing cotton, so that's very interesting.
Sure.
So,
the reason for decline in California is one of alternative crops, everything from grapes for wine to tomatoes for salad. Many products are higher valued than cotton or than row crops, and so they've supplanted cotton in those areas where it can be grown.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay, so tell me about your organization. What does your organization exactly do?
We are an organization of governments. We're a micro version of the United Nations. So the government of the United States, the government of Uganda, the government of Argentina, for example, governments of consuming countries like Korea and Russia, Germany are also members. We serve as a forum for standardization of trade rules. Just as one example, if you're going to ship a bale of cotton from, say, Lubbock, Texas to Jakarta, Indonesia, there are rules that accompany that. How much can it weigh? How much moisture can be in the bale? How many days of free storage do you get at the port? We are a forum where those kinds of rules are hammered out among countries. We provide statistics and we do some other things, but basically think of us as a platform where rules for trade are talked about.
Wow, that's fantastic. So is there... just right off the top of my head, is there a difference between synthetic cotton and organic cotton, for instance, maybe?
There's a difference in the way the cotton is produced. but the cotton that results. So if you have a handful of cotton in your hand, there's absolutely no difference, even on a molecular level, between two different production systems. So cotton is cotton, regardless of how it's produced. The main difference is, you know, just like people. If you want to go on an organic diet, you still need to have a certain number of calories every day in order to remain healthy. You still need to have a certain amount of protein, a certain amount of fat, a certain amount of lipids, and on. You've got to have a healthy diet.
Right.
Cotton is the same way. Plants are the same way. So you can, if you're going to grow cotton or any other crop organically, you still need to supply a certain amount of nitrogen, a certain amount of phosphate, a certain amount of potassium, a certain amount of boron, and on. And so it's growing cotton organically is a particular production system, but you still end up with the same product at the end of the day.
Wow. Okay. So what's the latest trend right now in the cotton industry? What's going on that the rest of us don't know anything about?
Well, the biggest challenge for the industry right now is that prices are too high. That may seem counterintuitive, but cotton, the world economy is competitive. And, you know, consumers go to stores and they want to buy products that are, you know, other things equal. You'd rather have a product that's lower cost rather than higher cost. That is reflected in the value chain all the way back down to the farmer. And if prices are too high, cotton loses market share to polyester. Right now, in round numbers, a pound of cotton costs 90 cents, and a pound of polyester costs only 70 cents. Might not sound like much of a difference, but any commodity market is characterized by very high volumes, very low margins per pound. 20 cents is an enormous difference. So that's probably the biggest single challenge facing the industry right now. There are worse problems they have than high prices. Don't get us wrong. We certainly appreciate the support from consumers that represents. Nevertheless, over the long run, cotton prices have got to remain competitive with polyester. You know, I could talk for hours about this stuff. Another issue facing cotton is what we broadly call sustainability or resource use. To grow cotton, whether it's organic or conventional or whatever, you need to use a certain amount of water, and a lot of research going into how to reduce cotton's water footprint. It takes energy to produce cotton, both in the form of nitrogen fertilizer, which comes from natural gas mostly. Also, a farmer to drive a tractor across a field to plant the crop has to burn diesel fuel. So any crop requires energy, and always searching for ways to reduce energy use. Worldwide, cotton accounts for about 7% of all pesticides used in agriculture.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's quite a bit. Now, cotton accounts for about 3% of world land area, and so 7% is disproportionate, roughly twice as much per hectare of pesticide is applied to cotton is applied or is represented by its area. So that's a big area of research. It's looking for better ways to control weeds and control insects so as to reduce the environmental footprint of cotton production. Been a lot of advances in recent years, and a lot of exciting things are coming on in the next few years. Nevertheless, that's an area of improvement that the cotton industry needs to focus on.
Okay. Would you consider cotton, it doesn't sound like it, but it's not considered to be a cash crop, right?
Oh, very much a cash crop. That's all it is. Say it's all it is. If you have a dollar's worth of cotton, about 80% of that is the fiber that goes to a textile mill, is made into yarn, and then into fabric, and then eventually becomes clothing or towels or sheets or something like that. About 20% of the value of cotton is represented by the seed. The seed is crushed. Very little seed is used in human consumption. The vast majority goes into livestock feed, particularly dairy feed. So it very much is a cash crop. Around the world, especially in developing countries, some farmers do retain their cotton on farm and use it in self-consumption. But that's out of 25 million tons, you're talking about a few hundred thousand tons worldwide, maybe 500,000 at the very most. Almost all cotton is sold through the marketing system, goes from a farm to a gin. A gin is a factory where cotton is cleaned. The seeds are separated from the lint. Seeds go by truck or train to feedlots, and the lint is packed into bales and goes to textile mills. It's one of the characteristics of the cotton industry is that it helps to connect people to world markets. And because it is a cash crop, almost all of it is sold through the marketing system. Got farmers in Lubbock, Texas, farmers in Burkina Faso, farmers in Vietnam are connected to world markets via the marketing system for cotton that operates.
I see. Let's talk about for a moment the issue of a thread count. What exactly is that?
Thread count is an engineering term that has been taken by people who market textile products and has become almost meaningless in any usable sense. So, thread count. So if you are a student in textile engineering, let's say you go to North Carolina State or Auburn or Clemson or Fashion Institute of Technology in New York, you are studying textile design and learning how to make things make textile products out of fiber. Thread count is and let me introduce two terms here. The warp is those are the long yarns or long threads that wrap around the beam. The weft, W-E-F-T, are the threads that go back and forth from left to right. Imagine when you're weaving a denim cloth, for instance, you've got long warp yarns that are stretched across the loom, and then the weft yarns are being carried back and forth by the shuttle. So thread count, as you're taught in engineering school, is the number of warp yarns per inch. So think of the long yarns that are stretched lengthwise across the loom, and the shuttle goes back and forth between those warp yards. So if you have a 200 count fabric, that means that in every inch, there will be 200 warp yarns going from left to right in that fabric. The marketing people, first of all, they took that concept and they added the weft just so they could double it. So in an ordinary fabric, so if you have 200 yarns going up and down, the warp yarns, you add 200 yarns going left and right, the weft yarns, and right off the bat, without any change in the construction of the fabric, you've got 200, becomes 400. Then the marketing people have done some other things. Many times you take two thin or very small yarns and you twist them together to make one thicker, stronger yarn. That's a regular process called doubling. Okay. And in any engineering sense, you would still count that as 200 yarns. The public relations people say, well, if you doubled a yarn, then even though it should just be counted as one, they count it as two. So now you can go 200 warp yarns with 200 weft yarns is 400. And if you've doubled those yarns, you can all of a sudden make it 800. Again, you haven't done a thing to the construction of the fabric. You just through the magic of public relations or marketing. You've inflated the number from 200 to 800. People ask, if you can't just look at the yarn count, then what do you look at to judge the quality of the fabric? Whether it's a towel or whether it's a dress shirt or whatever it is, forget yarn count. First of all, look at the fabric, turn it over, look at the hem, the seams on the inside. You don't have to be a textile engineer to notice whether the stitching is even and seems to be well made or not. And just feel the fabric. If it feels right and feels good, then it's probably going to serve you well. And forget about the claims on the packaging. That stuff is just advertising.
Okay, very good. Wow, that is a lot of information. I really appreciate that. All right, well, stand by. We're going to have to take a quick break. And, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back with Percival's Place.
And now, back to Percival's Place on TalkZone.com with Percy Dyer.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Percival's Place. So, Mr. Townsend, let's talk a little bit about what you mentioned in the beginning. Regulation. How do you guys regulate international companies, for instance, in terms of making cotton? How does that happen?
Yeah, good question. First of all, the organization that I work for, International Cotton Advisory Committee, I call it ICAC, is not an enforcement body. Let's say we come out with a recommendation. Nobody has an army or a police force that is going to enforce that. We work through consensus, and people voluntarily adopt best practices because it reduces costs. And that's how you get people to agree to change. So whether we're talking about the size of a bale of cotton, try to standardize that so they'll all fit into a 40-foot container for efficient shipment, or whether you're talking about everybody using the same documentation to invoice and to describe cotton that's moving in trade. Again, having everybody use the same documents makes it easier for everybody. And those are examples, but the answer is nobody forces anybody to do anything.
Okay.
But, you get together, you talk about what's going to be the most efficient way of doing it, what's going to lower cost, what is going to be best for the cotton industry as a whole, and then people, once you've come to an agreement on what those procedures might be, and people adopt voluntarily because that's the best way to make things work.
Okay, so I used to work in the State Department, so you're not like NAFTA, you're more like APEC, which is voluntary. So when a new company forms, they'll find it in their best interest to join you. Is that the best way to say that? And then, you know, you kind of.
Well, we hope so. Yeah, we hope so. And we certainly, like any organization, you have to be sensitive to the concerns of your members. And
right.
Our members are governments, but nevertheless, governments reflect the concerns of their industry. So in the end, we have to be sensitive to and reflective of the concerns of the cotton industry.
Okay.
And characteristic of cotton that, I don't know a lot about other industries, say like timber or fisheries or soybeans or something, but I suspect we all have certain characteristics in common. One of them is that new entrants to the cotton industry very rarely are total outsiders or complete strangers to the industry who come in and they're going to start a brand new business and having never been involved in cotton before. Most new entrants are made up of people who used to be employed by somebody else already in the industry. They already know something about cotton. They already know about us. They already know about the best practices, and so they tend to affiliate and to abide by best practices voluntarily. Another characteristic, I know limited for time here, but just point out another characteristic. These trade rules that I'm talking about are constantly changing. I mean, if they weren't changing, we'd have been done about 200 years ago. And,
right.
You wouldn't need to stay updated. But as technology changes, particularly transportation technology, the port handling facilities, container handling facilities, as information technology changes, as the needs of the textile industry change, all of these pressures bring new systems and new procedures. So these procedures and best practices in the conduct of trade are constantly evolving, and so it's a there's always new stuff to talk about all the time. And so new people are always coming into the industry and joining, and bringing new ideas. And what makes change in the industry exciting?
Wow. All right. So for the last few minutes, how many new companies are out there? Not new companies. How many companies are out there, relatively speaking?
Yeah. Well, it's a good question. There is no census, as I said at the beginning. We think you add it up country by country and try to figure these things out. There are over 200 million people are involved in cotton production. Around the world, there are probably about 10,000 merchants buying that cotton from farmers, transporting it to gins, and then shipping cotton from gins to textile mills. Out of those 10,000, a lot of those are small or local businesses. About 500 out of that 10,000, about 500 are international merchants handling cotton from Lubbock and sending it to China, or handing it from Australia, sending it to Indonesia. And out of those 500 firms, seven of them are handling about one-third of all the cotton trade in the world. So a lot of companies, but most of the business is done by a handful of fairly small companies. Handful of small number of fairly large companies. We estimate that there are probably about 30,000 cotton gins. Gin is a company that cleans cotton, about 30,000 of them around the world. There are likewise about 20,000 companies that buy cotton and spin it into yarn. And from there, the numbers start to just get too diffused to really estimate. Really do not have a good handle on how many companies weave yarn into fabric, or knit yarn into fabric, or produce toweling. That's a different process. The numbers are tens of thousands.
We're running out of time here now. How long has this industry been in business, and how long has your the company that you work for, how long has that been around?
Yeah. Well, the cotton scraps of cotton fabric have been found in tombs of pharaohs in Egypt, and in archaeological digs in the Indus Valley of India, and in the Andean highlands, indicating that the Incas used it. So the cotton industry has been around for thousands of years. But as a realistic matter, we date the commercial industry from 1798, when the cotton gin was invented. So roughly it's 200 years old.
Okay.
The The International Cotton Advisory Committee was formed in 1939. We're proud of the fact that we are older than the United Nations. We're one of the first international intergovernmental bodies that was formed. So we're pushing on now between 70 and 80 years old. And, we represent the interests of both producing and consuming countries. We serve as a forum for the discussion of trade rules and other matters of standardization.
Okay. All right, Mr. Townsend. Well, tell us again where your agency can be contacted.
Well, it's the International Cotton Advisory Committee. Our website is icac.org. Don't use the icac.com. That's a Clean Air Committee. And there's also there's an Interagency Committee Against Corruption, another ICAC in Hong Kong. Don't get us confused with that. It's icac.org. And my name is Terry Townsend. My email is Terry, T-E-R-R-Y, at icac.org. Be happy to hear from people if they have any other questions.
All right. Mr. Townsend, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate you giving us that kind of lecture and education. You know,
okay.
It's been a pleasure.
Sure. Happy to do it.
Thank you so much. And,
okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this episode of Percival's Place. Please join us next week where we'll have some more exciting guests for you.